More than half of Pennsylvania's COVID-19 deaths have occurred in nursing homes or other long-term care facilities. The deaths of the state's most vulnerable has raised alarms, but there are still those who say more has to be done to protect residents and staffers at these facilities. Joining us now is the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Healthcare Association, Zachary Schamburg. Zach Schamburg, welcome to the program.
Scott, good morning. Thanks for having me.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Zach, New York has been called the epicenter for COVID-19 geographically. It would seem that nursing homes and long-term care facilities across the country are ground zero for the disease, especially when it comes to deaths in this country. Is that an accurate description?
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, you called New York geographically the epicenter of COVID-19 across the country. I look at Pennsylvania, where 62% of the deaths statewide have occurred in our long-term care facilities. So I'd agree 100%. And, you know, it's something that we've been sharing both publicly and with state government over the course of the last few weeks. And really, even before the epidemic began in Pennsylvania, we knew that long-term care facilities, and that's nursing homes, personal care homes, and assisted living residences, would be the hardest hit in this epidemic. And, you know, I look again at those numbers, at the sheer numbers happening statewide. If 62% of the deaths are occurring in long-term care, why are providers receiving 0% of the support from state government?
Yeah, you just brought up so many points that I want to touch on. I received an email a week or so ago from someone in a long-term care facility, assisted living actually, that was saying they had gotten nothing, no PPEs, nothing from government anywhere else, probably because they didn't have a case. So talk about that. You know, who is getting the equipment when it comes to these facilities?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, I was on your show. I checked March 16th, which, by the way, feels like about 3 years ago now.
I know.
And, you know, we talked about the things that we were seeing from Washington State, whereas you and your viewers may recall, or your listeners may recall, that was where the first cases, reported cases of COVID-19 occurred, and it was in a nursing home in Washington State. So as we were talking to Washington State, we said, what do we need to be ready for here in Pennsylvania? And one of the first things they said after staffing and after priority testing was, you are going to run out and your providers are going to run out of personal protective equipment. That's masks, gowns, gloves, and goggles. You need to work with your state to make sure that you're adequately supplied. And I think initially the plan was, if you're a facility that has a positive case, we'll send out what's called a quick response team or a QRT to help you. And we'll get you the PPE, we'll get you the staffing aid, we'll get you everything that you need. Well, that was mid-March. A week later, those QRTs were disbanded because the numbers of cases were rising so rapidly. And frankly, I don't think the preparation was there to ensure that we had the necessary supplies. And, you know, now I hate to say it, and I think the listener who sent you that email said it perfectly, you know, it's every provider for themselves. I know providers are reaching out to other states, to manufacturers in other countries. I hate to say it, but there are providers who we've heard, you know, they have frontline workers wrapping themselves in aluminum foil and saran wrap and wearing coffee filters as masks. You know, we're working as an association with Harrisburg University, and it's a pretty incredible partnership. They are 3D printing face shields for our workers. And while that's an incredible partnership, and it's a great step in the right direction, it shouldn't have come to that, Scott. We should have been prepared with this PPE.
Okay, now wait a minute. I have to go back to what you were just describing. Wrapping themselves in aluminum foil? I mean, where's that occurring?
So we've heard of facilities not just in Pennsylvania, but nationwide, where providers are going to these lengths to protect themselves. I mean, if you're walking into a facility where there's simply no personal protective equipment, what else are you supposed to do? You know, right now there's a real shortage nationwide of gowns, and you've probably seen stories where frontline workers are being forced to wear ponchos, rain ponchos, or ponchos that you get at a Major League Baseball game. Again, I'm not saying that that's right. That's not approved. There's no guideline that says you should be doing that. But frontline workers are having to go to those lengths to protect themselves.
That's scandalous. I mean, that's just unbelievable in this day and age.
Yeah.
Granted, I know that so much of this happened so fast that it was tough to keep up with. But when we're talking about the most vulnerable people, where there have been the majority of deaths, that just is unacceptable. Zach, describe what the Pennsylvania facilities are doing to keep residents safe and their staff safe. I mean, you just touched on what they're trying to do to keep their staff safe. But what about residents?
Well, so when I was on your show on March 16th, we talked about some of the infection control protocols that were already being implemented across long-term care facilities in the state of Pennsylvania. So, you know, all visitation has been banned for all non-essential healthcare visitors. Exceptions are being made for visitors in end-of-life scenarios or hospice scenarios. Facilities are using alternative means of communication so that residents are able to communicate with their family members. We are seeing providers screen staff at the beginning of every shift to ensure that they're meeting the requirements for safe entry. All providers and frontline workers are now required to wear masks if they can get them. We've put an end to communal dining and group activities. You know, facilities are now instituting what's called cohorting or creating COVID-positive wings, floors, or maybe if it comes to this, even entire facilities, so that we can try to keep the virus concentrated in one area. But the real challenge of this, Scott, is that, you know, as we're learning more about the virus, and again, we talked about this over a month ago, so we look at long-term care. We know that long-term care represents our most vulnerable population, and that's senior citizens who are requiring around-the-clock care. They often have comorbidities and underlying conditions, and we still know so little about this virus, but what we're learning is that you can carry this virus yet be totally asymptomatic. So you've got staff coming in and out of facilities every day by no fault of their own who may be carrying this virus but exhibiting no symptoms. And, you know, I hope we're able to talk about it, but that would go to my next point, and that's we have got to institute priority testing for long-term care providers.
Yeah, Maryland yesterday, Larry Hogan, governor of Maryland yesterday, announced that all residents of nursing homes and long-term care facilities would be tested. Now, that's expensive. We don't have a lot of tests. But is that what you're advocating here in Pennsylvania?
That's exactly right. I read today New Jersey is doubling their testing. You said Maryland is testing. West Virginia has mandated testing for long-term care providers. I know Massachusetts has brought in the National Guard to help with testing. It was announced 2 days ago that the city of Los Angeles is providing free testing for all of their residents. I guess my question is, if they can do it, why can't we?
Well, then my question is, has this been a priority for the state?
Well, I think it clearly has not. And, you know, yesterday in the state house, an amendment was passed to a bill that basically required the governor, his administration, and the Department of Health to come up with a plan for testing, not get the test, not obtain the test, but just come up with a plan. How are we going to test folks? And we were very thankful that included in that amendment and included in the requirements for this plan, long-term care providers, workers, and residents would be a priority in that testing.
Zach, just a personal note, and my mother passed away in early January and was in a was living in a nursing home, suffering from Alzheimer's disease, and I can't help but think what the situation is like when there are wings of facilities that are separated from others for dementia and Alzheimer's patients. I mean, it's very difficult for those residents to understand what's going on anyway. How about now, where they're separated, and how can it be explained to them, or for them to understand what's going on?
Yeah, it's, well, first of all, I my condolences to you and your family, and I can tell you, I mean, I'll share a personal note that my grandfather has dementia, is in a personal care home now outside of Philadelphia, and we are grappling with the same issue. And, you know, you ask, can it be explained? Can it be understood? For someone like my grandfather, it can't. And, you know, I want to credit, I mean, I can talk about my personal experience, but I think it can extend statewide. I give credit to those staff members, those frontline workers who are doing this, who are trying to explain it, who are trying to keep residents safe, no matter what underlying condition they might have. You know, we're communicating with my grandfather at least once a week via FaceTime, via GoToMeeting, whatever we use. And Scott, it's heartbreaking, but you know, as I think I said to you a month ago, we know it's being done in his best interest and to keep him safe. And if we have to continue doing it that way, we'll keep doing it that way.
You mentioned staff. Are there enough staff members, people who are working in long-term care facilities, nursing homes?
Scott, I don't think there were enough staff in facilities before the epidemic started. And, you know, you could ask providers across the state about the staffing challenges that they faced a year ago, let alone right now. You know, you may have seen stories out of California where staff walked out of a nursing home for 2 days, or a story in southeastern Pennsylvania where the National Guard had to come in to help with staffing. And that's not hyperbole. That's the new reality for some. You know, the question is, how can providers keep staff now? I know that every provider that I've spoken with is paying hazard pay. They're doing wage increases of $5 to $15 an hour, bonuses, incentives, whatever it takes to keep staff in the facilities. And that's not just common. That's become mandatory in this environment. But, you know, one of the things that we're asking state government for, as well as the governor, is critical emergency funding, and that emergency funding would go to staff. And our fear is that very soon, if we're not able to allocate dollars to long-term care providers, providers are not going to be able to afford to continue paying those necessary bonuses and those necessary incentives to keep this workforce in the buildings, and frankly, to pay them what I think we all know they deserve.
Well, I want to touch on that a little bit more, because you know, even in normal circumstances, as you said, these workers worked hard, aren't making a lot of money. Turnover has been high because it is a stressful job, and they don't make a lot of money. Now, it's hard to even imagine what the stress is that they're going through. You know, I give them all the credit in the world, because not making a lot of money and putting their lives on the line every day to go in and try to keep the residents safe. I mean, I guess the question is, and it's hard to tell, Zach, but will anything come out of this permanently in the way that these workers are looked upon and paid?
Well, I think we're seeing now, and it's a shame that it took this epidemic to put these workers in the spotlight, the frontline workers in our long-term care facilities, but they're heroes, and there's no other way to say it. And, you know, you asked the governor a few minutes ago, what are we going to learn from this? And moving forward, what's going to change? And when we talk about long-term care and we talk about nursing homes specifically, we're talking about a provider group, a part of the healthcare continuum that receives more than 70% of its reimbursement for the care provided by the Medicaid program. And that program has not been adequately funded for years. And what I'm hoping that we'll see as we realize the heroism that has taken place in our long-term care facilities, that there will be an emphasis put on long-term care moving forward. Long-term care providers and workers and residents, most importantly, will get the support that they need. And we will come out of this epidemic, which won't leave long-term care, Scott, for at least the next few months, but that we'll come out of this epidemic knowing that they deserve our gratitude and they deserve support from our state government.
So to summarize, Zach, if you were to ask today, what do you need to make sure that, make sure is a little bit, saying this in a way that is too adamant, put it that way. But what has to happen to ensure that, I'm doing it again. Anyway, what has to happen going forward to keep residents safe and keep staff safe as well?
Yeah, you know, earlier this week, we at PHCA released a long-term care plan for Pennsylvania. And the things that we are asking for, critical emergency funding, critical priority testing for long-term care providers, workers, and residents, critical priority personal protective equipment, and really collaboration with state government. I think if we do those things, and Scott, we needed them yesterday, but if we implement them today, it will give providers and workers the tools that they need to be able to care for our most vulnerable. That's what we need to do right now.
Pennsylvania Healthcare Association President and CEO Zachary Schamburg. Zach, thank you very much for being on the program today.